everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You are listening to It's All About Food. I'm just like smiling and almost tearing up thinking about how many times I've said hello, everybody. This is my 10th year anniversary program of It's All About Food on the Progressive Radio Network. Can you believe it? I've spent 10 years talking about food every week. And I don't know about you, but I have learned an awful lot, and I keep learning. One of the things that I really like to do, especially when I interview authors, I like to read their books. I read the whole thing. And I'm really looking forward to a number of shows that are coming up because they're all connected to new books. So I just wanted to mention some of them. Next week, we have on the program Dr. William Lee, who has written the book Eat to Beat Disease. And I think he has some very novel ideas, a little different than some of the approaches many of the other plant-based physicians have had on that we've talked to on this program. And then April 9th, I will be talking to Will Tuttle. I love this man. He brings so much peace and compassion just through his voice and his being. And he is the editor of a new book called Buddhism and Veganism. And then I haven't posted this one yet, but I'll be talking with another author, someone who I recently went to a book launch for him. And the title of the book, I love it, is called Eating Tomorrow. And the author of Eating Tomorrow is, oh my goodness, Gary's on the show. Wait a minute. I want to just say that the author of Eating Tomorrow is Timothy Wise. And now, Gary, how are you?
Congratulations, Karen, on 10 years at Progressive Radio Network on It's All About Food.
Thank you so much. Well, if everybody knows, I'm in New York, and my partner, Gary DiBattei, is still in California. Come home, Gary.
I know. I was starting to tear up just listening to your intro.
I know. Hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody. Have a great show today. I'm really looking forward to listening to your show with Bilal.
Okay.
Sounds fascinating.
Well, thank you. And you've been a very supportive and important piece of this program. So thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Love you.
Okay.
Miss you. And have a great show.
Thank you.
Congratulations. 10 years.
Woo! Thank you. That was awesome. Gary DiMattei, your favorite guest on this program. And yes, you know, anybody is actually welcome to call into this program. The number is 888-874-4888. Did you get that? There's a lot of eights in there. 888-874-4888. And you're welcome to call in any time. And you know you can also send me comments and questions, which many of you do, thank you, to info@realmeals.org. All right. I've wiped my tears, and I'm ready to start anew and bring on my very, 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 very special guest. Here we go. Bilal Kizilbash. He's been on this program before, and he has presented lectures on leadership, innovation, and his team's cancer breakthrough at numerous conferences, most notably at the Global Health and Innovation Conference at Yale University, attended by over 3,000 people. Bilal holds U.S. patent number 9919016, called Product and Method of Deploying Kale Derivatives for Anti-Cancer Effects. As the CEO of Easy Kale Labs, he is continuing his research into the cancer-fighting properties of kale while offering a next-generation product for making kale consumption easier. Bilal's Easy Kale. And I have some in front of me. We're going to be talking about that in a moment. But first, welcome, Bilal.
Hi, Karen. How you doing?
You know, I'm very happy today. How are you?
Good. Congratulations on the anniversary. This is amazing. 10 years is no joke.
Well, I'm smiling, but it is. Yeah, it's serious. It's
yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of work that went into it, a lot of reading, and I think it's been a good thing. So
absolutely, I definitely know the pain and power of consistency. I mean, I cannot begin to tell you the number of lives that you've touched during this time frame. I mean, you probably don't realize it yourself, but you've impacted a lot of people over this time.
Thank you, Bilal. And I want to talk about the impact we've had on each other in a moment. But first, I forgot to mention this, but the first time I did this program, the studio was in another location on the Upper West Side, and I came in and I had lots and lots and lots of notes. And I started the program, and it was a very scary thing because I didn't have a guest on the program. It was just me. And for an hour, I was just talking out loud. Now, I mean, normally we think to ourselves and we don't think out loud. And when we're talking, we normally talk to a person. And I had no idea who was there, who was listening. And it was very intimidating. And I've learned a lot since then. And I'm not intimidated to sit in the studio anymore by myself and just babble. And one of the reasons is because I know that there are people out there. And I actually sometimes feel their presence, which is important. Okay, first thing, I want to talk about how we met. Is that okay?
Of course, yeah.
Right, so you were working in the beginning. You were working at Enterprise Rent-A-Car and in my neighborhood, and I came in to rent a car.
Yes.
And let me ask you a question, because I've only noticed this at Enterprise. Are you instructed to ask your renters what they're going to do with their car? Or were you? Because you're not with them anymore.
Yeah. No, I mean, it depended upon the manager. Most of the time, no, you weren't really. Like, you just check in the customer and get them through the door with the best customer service possible. One of the reasons why I like to ask that question is because I wanted to problem solve, because obviously the customer is renting a car for a reason. So are they renting it to go to a doctor's appointment or to haul a bunch of stuff? So I would like to try and do my best at that time to fit the needs of the customer, if that makes sense.
Okay, that solves a mystery. So you had asked me what I was going to do with the car, and I was going to an event to exhibit with my nonprofit Responsible Eating and Living. And you wanted to know about it, so I started to explain how we promote a healthy plant-based diet for health and environment. And you were very excited. You told me you were very interested in environmental sustainability. And we just kept blabbling along there. And somehow the subject of kale came up. I might have talked about my cancer experience. Maybe you remember.
Yeah.
But I was very excited about kale, and you were excited about kale, and that was the beginning for me and you as friends.
Yes.
And as kale ambassadors.
Yeah, kale, yeah.
Kale, yeah. All right, and then you decided you wanted to get a master's degree, and you went off to Mississippi to go to school.
Yes.
Which is an interesting place to be. And maybe we can talk a little bit about Mississippi, too.
Sure.
But you did some very interesting research there. And I interviewed you a few years ago on my program to talk about it. But can you talk a little bit about that research? Because it's groundbreaking and fascinating.
Sure. And you mentioned the patent earlier. So that was pretty exciting that we actually got our first patent on March 20th of last year. So that was the end of one chapter and the beginning of several others in terms of applying for an additional wall of patents on our other discoveries and product developments. But it all started many, many years ago when we had a very interesting breakthrough with kale. We found that juice curly kale selectively kills melanoma cancer cells in vitro while not affecting non-cancerous cells, which was just, it was mind-blowing, especially in the very beginning. As I mentioned then, I thought I was making a mistake. And then lo and behold, it turns out it wasn't a mistake, and it was really quite powerful because every time we started altering the kale, and we ended up seeing dramatically produce results where it was killing the cancerous cells less effectively and also killing the non-cancerous cells. But when we left it alone, it was killing the cancerous cells pretty astoundingly and not really affecting the non-cancerous cells. And it gets even trippier from there, where we managed to capture footage of the non-cancerous cells going up to the kale fragments, tearing pieces off of it, doing something to it, spitting it out, and not dying. So that's where it gets pretty interesting. It even gets even more fascinating when, I can't remember, I think it was my third time going to the Global Health and Innovation Conference, second time I was going to the Global Health and Innovation Conference. I had a professor there who asked me, like, hey, it's great that the kale is killing the cancer cells, but extend the non-cancerous treatment for a longer period of time because they grow, proliferate slower. So let's see what happens there. I was able to successfully extend it out way beyond the typical treatment of the melanoma cells, which was about 4 days on average, 4 to 5 days on average. We were able to extend it out to 13 and even went beyond that up to 45 days. And with the kale treatment without the non-cancerous cells not dying.
Wow. Isn't that wild? So they were pretty impressed with you at that Yale conference, but they were also maybe a little patronizing?
The very first time, yeah. I guess it wasn't even so much the kale. It was more the fact that I flew in from Mississippi.
What happens in Mississippi? Yeah. New York or California or Chicago, you know. You're nowhere.
Yeah, I even had somebody ask me the most asinine question ever. They were like, do people wear shoes in Mississippi? I looked at them. I said, are you serious? I'm at Yale University. I cannot believe that. I won't even dignify that with a response. I couldn't believe that was a question. And then I told them, I said, what do you think? I'm doing this research in a basement. I said, we're in an NIH-funded lab. And everyone got shocked, like, oh, God, they have that there? I'm like, come on, seriously?
Wow. Well, Mississippi, unfortunately, is a state that is relatively poor compared to other states. The nutrition that people are getting is not very good, and their rates of chronic disease are higher than other places. So it's a place that needs a lot of help.
Yeah, and that's actually where I'm going to the Global Health Innovation Conference for this year. I'm doing multiple presentations there, and one of my talks is Eating But Still Hungry, What the Kale? And it's addressing the food desert situation. And believe it or not, I guess destiny works in a fascinating way, because coming to Mississippi, I'm in one of the poorest states in the entire country, as well as the central Mississippi area is one of the central hubs for food desert areas, according to the USDA map. And it's really fascinating to go into some of the poorest neighborhoods in Jackson, and you'll see nothing but convenience stores. You won't really see any supermarkets or any kind of like Kroger, or like in New York you have Key Food and such. So there is no main supermarkets. Most of them have left because it wasn't profitable for them. Anyway, so actually it was one of the talks I was doing in Jackson, and one of the residents came up to me and said, hey, Bilal, this is really great that you had this discovery with kale and you're doing all these fantastic talks, but they said we don't have access to kale. And I was like, what are you talking about? I specifically focused my research on the most widely available version of kale, you know, curly kale. Anyway, so they invited me to go to the local grocery store with them, which was like a local Save-A-Lot. I did, and I was shocked. They had collard greens, other like mustard greens, but they did not have kale there. In fact, I did find kale at one of the grocery, that was a Food Depot, somewhere by Terry Road, I think. I found it over there, but it wasn't for sale. It was in the deli meat section as part of the decoration. So I said, do you guys have kale? And I thought they thought I was asking to buy for decoration. I said, no, to eat.
Wow.
So,
well, that's what it was used for a very long time and still is in many places, a decoration.
Absolutely. Well, one of the reasons why is because it's so fibrous and it's so very tough. So, I mean, even when we were doing our experiments where we've juiced over 3,500 pounds of kale at this point, well over that amount, that's a ridiculous amount. That's like a car, right? Wow. I can tell you the juicers that can withstand it, like Breville, is outstanding. They even sent us 2 juicers for free. And at this point, the students and I, we nicknamed it the Kalinator 1 and Kalinator 2, because after all that abuse, they're still kicking. And that's just mind-blowing to me.
It is, and I just want to interject here, not to stop you, but I have a Breville Juice Fountain Elite. I've had it for 12 years, and it's still juicing. And I used it like every day for 10 years.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, so we're not doing a commercial for Breville, but we're two happy customers.
Exactly. Well, I managed to overheat the motor, but even then, after once it cooled down, I mean, we're talking about it's still kicking. But I won't mention the cheaper one. It's one you can find at Walmart and everywhere else, like Target. Within 10 minutes, we managed to burn out the motor. One of the students freaked out because she's like, oh, my God, I think I broke it. And it starts smoking and everything. I'm like, dude, don't worry about it. We anticipated that thing to break anyway. It was only $40. But it was such a loud noise. It was like, what? And it just did that. And then next thing you know, we're like, okay, we're definitely not using that for any more experiments. But it's been an absolute wild ride.
Now, you've been invited back to Yale, and you are now being invited as a hero.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I'm honestly super humbled by this entire experience. And I don't know if I was mentioning to someone this morning about a couple of years ago how our work was mostly ignored, and now we're gaining so much attention. And it's so cool because other professors are replicating our work. And that in itself, just makes me so happy because it's focused on humanity. So I had the reason why this was a discussion this morning, I was talking to another researcher, and they're like, aren't you worried about people copying your work? I said, why should I be worried? I should be encouraging that. You know, this is the true essence of scientific discovery, right? Find the flaws in my work. Let us improve upon it, because it's not about me. It's not about my ego. It's about humanity, is it not?
You're a good man, Bilal. Not many people are as good as you.
I don't know if I'm a good man. I'm a weird man.
No, you're good. You're good. Just say thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, keep going.
Yeah. But yeah, if we actually live the true scientific principles, we could have a lot more breakthroughs quicker, and we can also vet out ideas a lot faster. Negative results are incredibly powerful. And throughout the years of me doing this, I started realizing how results are kind of cherry-picked for the most part, because some people even asked me about 2 years ago, what happens if you didn't have this discovery with Kale? I said, I would have moved on to the next thing. I would have kept trying to find something, because this isn't about us. It's about humanity. I mean, us isn't meaning the researchers. I was talking about this is about humanity. We are not in an ivory tower. We are in service to the people. All the work that we do is to the betterment of humankind, mankind, the planet. I mean, we should not be making discoveries that are unsustainable, that's destroying our planet. That's another thing that I constantly talk about, because when I was at another scientific conference about 2 years ago, they were talking about this groundbreaking discovery, but I said, do you guys realize the environmental implications of what you're talking about? And I'll never forget, one of the researchers said, oh, we'll let the next generation figure out. And he was joking. Like, he wasn't actually, I hope he wasn't serious. But I told him, I said, that very thinking is so dangerous, because now you fix one domino and you knock over 10 others. How does that make sense?
No.
Exactly. So we have to think about the bigger picture. How do our actions impact the world and universe that we're living in?
Well, you know, they should teach that in school, too, but they don't. Just some people figure it out on their own, the good ones, like you.
Well, I keep failing because, you know, our current Kale Shaker is in a plastic bottle, and ideally I don't want it to be that way. But even if it is, at least people can refill it. I've been trying to play with different models to get people to keep refilling their shakers instead of throwing it out. Even it's just so funny that we're talking about this right now, because maybe an hour ago I was at the Aladdin restaurant testing out a brand new metal shaker that could withstand autoclaving, which is a high temperature and heat pressure sterilization system, because ultimately I want to reduce waste. I know everyone uses buzzwords, but I really mean it. I mean, even with our customers who are so far, we haven't had a single customer unsatisfied with our product. Knock on wood, Nelson, I'll get one in the next hour. But we had had some issues with the shipping. So, like USPS in particular, it seems to be really rough with our packages, and they busted open a few of our packages, and the customer got it, and they said, oh, we have kale powder everywhere.
Oh.
So they asked them if they want to ship it back. I said, no, please just compost it. And that's what I tell all of our customers. I said, if you ever want to throw away our kale, don't do it. Take the kale powder, sprinkle it on the grass or something. Put it somewhere else. Let nature do its thing. So don't put it in another wasteful landfill. That makes sense.
Okay, let's back up a little bit, because let's talk about what Easy Kale is. Now, we you can't really tell us how you make it because it's proprietary. And you figured out this amazing way to squeeze 4 cups of kale into a tablespoon.
Yeah.
And your product is 100% organic, USDA organic. It's all kale, no gluten, GMOs, artificial ingredients. I'm reading the label right now. So let's talk about Easy Kale. And maybe you want to share what you had to do to get this on the market.
Sure. So as I mentioned before, I was going along doing tons of different talks locally and in different states. And one of the things that I noticed that there was an opportunity that no one was really grabbing. People want to eat healthier, but they don't like the taste of eating healthy or the texture. So specifically kale in particular. So after I would talk about our breakthrough, there were people that went out and bought way too much kale. So Whole Foods loved me. Kroger loved me because none of that money came to me. They were just buying it at the store.
Mm.
But the problem is people were burning themselves out with kale. They were doing too much or too little. So there was no middle ground. And one of the key things that I started to notice is that customers didn't like the taste or texture. Great. So I thought maybe if you made it in a convenient packaging or convenient form, people would incorporate more into their daily life knowing the health benefits. Boy, was I wrong. I couldn't have made a stupider assumption in my entire life. So we first made, at first actually I tried dealing with a whole bunch of different companies. So as our company gets bigger, some of the companies that rejected me probably would be like, oh, that dude, I remember him. He was so annoying. So I tried reaching out to several companies that already made kale powder. I'm like, hey, I got to wait for you guys to make it better. And they're like, buzz off. Anyway, so after getting so many rejections, I eventually said, you know what, the hell with it. I'll do it myself. And that's where I developed the first kale powder, which was so disgusting. It was only 6 times the concentration. And by God, everyone was not shy about telling me how nasty it was. So instead of taking it personally, I went back to the drawing board. And then I basically discovered by accident a way of minimizing the flavor profile while maintaining the nutrition of kale. So it's basically like eating leaf kale. You get most of the benefits of that. And next thing you know, we put it on in the restaurant and every table in Aladdin, which is a restaurant right next to UMMC, which is one of the largest hospitals in Mississippi. And next thing you know, we have a hit. Everyone's telling us how great it is, the fact that they can't taste it, they love it, which also begs a different question, the fact that why do people hate kale so much?
I love the way it tastes, but it's an acquired taste.
This is true. But the fact that they could shake it on their french fries, shake it on their burger, shake it on whatever they're doing, because one of the things that one of the ladies who bought our product early, she told me, she said, the fact that this product doesn't preach to her makes it easier for her to incorporate. And that was several years ago. And then within a year, she told me, she said, hey, I tried my first piece of fresh kale. And I couldn't believe that this was, what do they call it, gateway? No, I shouldn't use that. That's a bad word.
a gateway leaf.
A transition to actually eating fresh kale, which was so amazing. She was like, yeah, she tried her first thing and it wasn't so offensive to her. And I said, hey, give it a little time. And then she told me she started incorporating more salads in her life. And I was like, who would have thought Easy Kale would do that to people, right?
That's a great story. Now,
yeah.
You mentioned before in Mississippi that it was hard to find kale. So I have 2 questions.
Yes.
Where did you get the kale from that you did all your tests on? And where do you get the kale now to go into Easy Kale? Maybe you can tell me. Maybe you can't.
So the kale in the beginning, very beginning, I was getting it from our local Kroger. So I lived in Clinton and spent most of my time in Jackson. But it's the poorest areas in Jackson that don't have access to fresh kale. Now, in the other areas like Madison, so these are in the Jackson metro area, Brandon, Flowood, Clinton, kale is quite abundant. In fact, you can find kale in like the central hub areas of Jackson. So if you go to the Kroger in Jackson by Highway 55, you'll find quite a bit of kale.
Hmm.
The problem is now when you go into more of the less populated neighborhoods and the poorer neighborhoods. So the ones more on the outer edges, that's where you won't really, you'll find a lot of convenience stores, you'll find a lot of liquor stores, but you will not find easy access to fresh produce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's another thing, and that's one of the things I'll be talking about at the upcoming conference, is about our Blooming Desert project. So I love Rich because he has these awesome dramatic flair titles.
Mm-hmm.
But blooming desert, basically, we're trying to address the food desert situation. So our Easy Kale is shelf-stable for over 2 years. And also, it has over $65 worth of kale in that tiny little $14.99 packet. And we're also SNAP eligible. So if you're part of the SNAP program...
I didn't do the math there, but that's impressive.
Oh, I'm all about value.
Yes, that's a great value. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, the original product was selling for $30. It was $29.99. And that was non-organic. I mean, technically it was organic. We were using a small farm in Iowa at the time, and basically they could not afford the USDA certification. Anyway, we outgrew them, and now we're using a farm in Illinois. And this is a much larger farm, and they're USDA certified organic, so it's homegrown in America. Because that's the other thing. There are cheaper kale powders out there, but then you find out they're from China or something, or or Norway and other places. But yeah, this is homegrown here, and it's just been
so
really...
I'm wondering, how do you make it so inexpensive with all that kale crammed in there?
So it's a process of the economy scale. So what is it called? Economies of scale. So when you're producing more over a period of time, the general costs tends to come down. So as we continue to expand, because like I mentioned, when we first introduced the product it's first introduced Easy Kale, that is. Because before that, I was selling under different names, because it got to the point that some of our customers remembers the days that we hand wrote kale powder on the packaging. And then from there, we went to Kizzy Shaker, and then from Kizzy Shaker, we went to Utopia Shaker, and from Utopia Shaker, we finally made our way to Easy Kale. So last week, someone was like, hey, you have a competitor on the market, and I can't believe their product is this and this and that, and it wasn't that bad. And I was like, hey, it's actually mine. So people got confused. They thought our own product was competing with the stuff. No, it's just an older version. But that's the thing. With an entrepreneur, you constantly fail, and you learn through your failures, and you just keep growing. Otherwise, you can stop and give up, right? But, yeah, so how do we pack it in? It's economies of scale. So as we continue to grow, you're going to see the price of our product coming down, and we're going to offer more value to the customer. Wow. And in fact, we're going to do even more than that. We're going to eventually introduce newer products and newer brands. So we're going to go beyond just kale. We're going to introduce other fruits and vegetables that people really genuinely like, and it'll be an easy, convenient way to get more veggies into your daily life.
I'm like imagining this can go up in space with astronauts.
Hey, why not? If they want to bring me, I'll totally go too.
Now, we're not discriminating against other leafy green vegetables, are we? Have you ever tried, you said in Mississippi there were collards and mustard greens, and have you ever juiced them and seen how they have affected cancer cells?
So we have juiced a few other vegetables and stuff. One of the main reasons why we did that also as a control, because you just want to throw the kale juice on there and have it killing the cancer cells. And next thing you know, it could be the fact that you could throw any kind of juice in there and it could basically be killing it. So we tried different types of lettuce and different types of greens, all without the same effect that we've seen with kale. However, if we had unlimited funding, oh my goodness, I can't even begin to tell you, I'd be a testing beast.
Okay, so yeah, more leaves out there to test.
Oh, there's a ton more work to do.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I started selling Easy Kale, to continue funding our cancer research, to continue funding our scientific research. So we wouldn't be dependent upon any grant agency. So any grant agency, hey, you know what, next year, because this is something I see happen to a lot of scientists. They're constantly in fear, will our grant get renewed? Will it get renewed for the same amount next year? That's stressful. I mean, even though doing the grant application process itself is like a full-time job. I want to free up our scientists to focus on actually doing the science and improving upon their techniques, improving upon their work, and instead of dedicating a significant amount of time to constantly fighting for grants. And that's where I realized private enterprise is quite an interesting way to go. Because basically, if we develop a product that is great, that people like, that people want to buy, we're not forcing them. They willingly want to buy our product. We can use that as a means to continue doing scientific research in a sustainable way.
Very good. Well, I'm a believer in kale. As you know, when I was first diagnosed with cancer back in 2006, I decided to make a green juice every day, and the lead ingredient was kale. I would add other things like celery and lemon and ginger to make it, I don't want to say more palatable, but yeah, more palatable. And maybe more easy to digest, because just drinking straight kale juice requires some practice.
It does. There's also a danger in that. So with the kale, I mean, besides the goitrogenic element that people constantly talk about, which is more a function of the pesticides on the kale, and then also kale itself also has a goitrogenic effect on its own, too. But we're talking about you have to consume massive quantities of it to actually have that happen. And there's also a way to mitigate that by cooking the kale in the beginning. So those with thyroid issue, the earlier you can add kale or even easy kale into that process, the better it is for you. But if you don't have thyroid issues, the later you can add the kale, the more fresh it is, the better it is. Same thing with easy kale.
It's an interesting topic. We don't have to go there. I know that Dr. Furman always tells us that people that have thyroid issues can eat cruciferous vegetables without a problem. The key is you don't want to eat wheelbarrows full of them.
Exactly. So moderate, normal amounts. Always they have to be prefaced with the thing of talking to your doctor. They have to have blood tests and make sure everything's being monitored correctly. But generally, most physicians agree that cruciferous vegetables and greens are incredibly healthy for them. Just they have to add it earlier in to minimize the goitrogenic effects. But like I said, the bigger problem is the pesticide. And I don't know if you saw the latest news report about kale being amongst the 30 dozen.
Yeah.
It's been there for a while. I'm surprised that this is making news now.
Well,
I mean, kale's been a pretty...
The Environmental Working Group puts out a list called the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen. They've been doing it for a while. And what they do is they take the data that's publicly available from the USDA. It's just kind of cumbersome to go through it all. And not all fruits and vegetables are tested all the time. And they'll put out a list of the ones that have the most pesticide residues and the least pesticide residues of conventional industrial produce. The thing that people don't know is that they put out the dirty dozen, 12. Sometimes they add one or two. But there are other fruits and vegetables that are number 13 and 14 and 15 that might have a lot of residue. They're just not the top. I just want to mention that because people don't realize it. That's why I'm always insisting if you can to buy organic. But if you can't, the nutrition in those foods is more important than the residue. Unfortunately, the residue is there. But yeah, well, kale's been going up on the list with residue.
Well, I was going to mention that I discovered a way to help reduce residual pesticides. So that was another big one of our breakthroughs that we're in the process of getting another patent on by using regular detergent. So the thing is that there's many ways to do it wrong because the plant material is porous. So if you're washing your kale or any produce in a soapy mixture, your plant material will absorb the soap, and next thing you're eating soap, and that's some bad juju. I mean, we saw how bad the Tide Pod Challenge went, right? And, you know, also another thing that just blows our mind about the Tide Pod Challenge, and we mentioned this really quickly because the
kids... Wait, explain what the Tide Pod Challenge for those who may not know.
Sure, I'm sorry. The Tide Pod Challenge is when the young kids on the internet decided to eat Tide Pods, which is a liquid detergent meant for washing clothes.
Yeah.
They don't realize that that detergent is incredibly basic. And once you introduce that to your GI system, your gastrointestinal system, it basically liquefies and necroses. So you're hurting yourself in a significantly... I mean, the kids think it's a candy. It looks like a candy. The colors are appealing. But they don't realize they're literally liquefying their inside.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me as a scientist to talk to several groups of kids about this is some bad juju. Now imagine that on a much, much smaller scale where you're actually washing and then you're soaking it. Like one lady told me, oh, I wash my greens in the tub and I soak it in dishwashing soap. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
It was so funny because she said, none of my grandkids complained. And her grandkids were right there next to her. They were like, Granny, your stuff tastes like soap.
Yeah, surprise.
Yeah, but it's just amazing to me. So some people are like, oh my God, aren't you afraid about people stealing? I said, no, not necessarily, because there's so many ways to do it wrong. There's a very limited way to do it right. And so we've developed a way of doing that. Now, organic, fantastic. Now, organic, they're not allowed to use synthetic pesticides, but they are allowed to use non-synthetic pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
So you still have the risk factor there with certain organic produce because they have to use sometimes seven times the amount to get equivalent results. So the best produce you have is the one you grow yourself, or the one where you know a local farmer and you can trust them. And it's basically something that you can know, you can see, you can feel.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So if you're growing it in your, I don't know, your little garden, you know what you're putting there. So then you could rest, relax, rest peacefully at night knowing, hey, this is truly organic in a way. Right?
Yes. I'm actually tasting a little bit of the easy kale right now as you're talking. I brought it with me.
Give me a live reaction. Tell me.
No, I like it. I like the taste of kale, but it doesn't really... Well, I'll tell you, it has... like right when you put it on the tongue... I'm going to do it again. The flavor profile kind of changes. So first it tastes like... The first hit tastes familiar, like another dried parsley or something. But then the second hit is a very nice flavor. I like it a lot. Doesn't taste like kale or anything, but it just tastes like, oh, that's good. And then it goes away.
Here's the fascinating thing about that. So as we've been on the market now for over 2 years, people that love kale can taste the kaliness, or at least a vegetable. Mm-hmm. People that hate kale, as well as they just in general don't eat greens, they don't perceive the flavor of kale. Mm. So that is something I find really particularly fascinating. So I'm sure that your palate is probably trained and accustomed to the flavor profiles of many different types of greens, so you're able to detect it. So even when we were at the farmer's market last year, we had several people who loved kale that were able to taste the very minor hint of kale flavor profile, while those that would eat nothing but meat, they couldn't taste it. It was like they were blunt and numb to it. Wow. So that's something that's really, really fascinating. And the meat eaters are the ones that are trying to really avoid eating greens. It's almost like a sports team. Like they're either white or black about it. They're like, I won't eat any green. I even had one guy, I tried to give him the kale shaker for free, and he was like, what am I going to do with this? I'm going to shake this on my garden. I said, man, just take it for free and try it out. He's like, no. He said, every time my wife gives me kale with my steak, he said, I throw it out. He said, I eat my kale, my steak. You know? And his wife,
there's one mature individual.
Well, it's so funny because his wife, so he left. He had an attitude. But let me tell you something funny. His wife stayed behind. She bought our kale shaker. She said he's going to start eating kale whether he knows it or not. She said he can't taste it, so she's going to start sneaking it into his meal. Sneaky, sneaky.
Well, let's continue on that thought. So one of the benefits about this is that anyone can add kale to their meals, and it really is... You don't really taste it. So you can add it to a smoothie. You can sprinkle it on other foods, and it's not going to affect the flavor of the dishes that you eat, and you're going to get a powerful punch of nutrition. And that's especially good for children.
Yes, that's exactly right.
So you have... Shall we bring Mina on and hear her story?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Let's tell me a little bit about Mina and what we're going to hear from her.
Well, Mina is a super mom. She's very much into the geek culture, as well as she loves to actually do more into mermaid culture. But I would like her to explain a little bit more about that. And she's our Easy Kale Awesome Specialist. I love her. She's amazing.
Okay, great. Mina, are you with us?
I am. I am here.
Great. Thank you. Tell us your story with Easy Kale.
Well, I'm really excited about this Easy Kale, even though my children are grown. Now, I grew up in Louisiana, so just next door to Mississippi, in a rural area where most of our greens were collard greens, turnip greens, and I love them to this day. My kids also grew up there until their young teen years. They don't like vegetables. They didn't pick up the whole Southern culture of collard greens and turnip greens and any kind of vegetables, really. I mean, corn I don't consider a vegetable, but they'll eat it. So I was always worried that they weren't quite getting what they needed. And I, at that point, we're talking, you know, 20 years ago, where there were no kale shakers. I didn't even know what kale was. If it, you know, I suppose it was around back then. I did not know about it. Again, with rural Louisiana. So we just did the best we could with nutrition and got by. So to this day, my 25-year-old, my 22-year-old, and my 20-year-old don't eat kale. And when they come to mom's, which isn't as often as I'd like because we all live in separate states, they're going to be force-fed kale. They're not going to realize it. In their lasagna, in their spaghetti, on their burgers, anything that I can put it on, they're going to eat it. And they're going to go home, and I'm going to Amazon Prime it to them, because at least two of them are interested in eating healthier than they are. So that's where Easy Kale is coming in big time for me. I'm very, very excited about this product.
Great.
Yeah, the customer reaction has been really quite fascinating. We have quite a few elderly male customers that use our product for reasons that I didn't expect them to. But and they weren't shy about sharing that. And then we have the other element where the other side of it, where we have college kids enjoying Easy Kale because of the fact that it gets them drunker quicker with less alcohol, to the point that we had to actually put a warning label on our product.
That's fascinating, actually. That's fascinating. And I don't know how much we want to share that information, because even with warnings, kids will be kids and go, oh, let's try it.
Yeah, exactly. We had to put the warning there because we had a couple of customers. They usually drink like one glass of wine with their meal. And all of a sudden they said, you know, all of us, they're suddenly more tipsy than normal. And they said the only new thing they added in their life was the Easy Kale. And I said, well, technically, yeah. So it got to the point that we had to put a warning just in case you do have a glass of wine with your dinner and then also you start driving and you're like, why am I tipsier than normal?
Well, it's does fresh kale do that with alcohol?
It can if you concentrate it enough, yes.
So if I ate a big kale salad, like 7 cups of kale, or a big pile of steamed kale, and I had a glass of wine, would I get drunker faster?
Steamed, probably not. It would probably have to be raw, and you'd probably have to eat more than that.
Because I eat a lot of kale in a sitting. It's just, I'm wondering about it. Interesting.
Yeah, the fact that it's highly concentrated makes it easier to consume more of it, which normally isn't an issue. But when you're consuming it with alcohol, we're not entirely sure how it's working. We're speculating it has something to do with the liver. But yeah, it's just a reported side effect of it. And apparently, we were talking to some of the college kids. They said it's not a side effect. It's a wanted effect. And I'm like, dude, I don't know if I mentioned this to you, that one of them, they don't do their homework on time, but they definitely calculated how much money they're saving per kegger using our Easy Kale, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's just one more interesting thing about this fascinating product. So we don't want to mix it in with our cocktails, but we do want to mix it in with our smoothies.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. Okay, so you have a website. It's easykale.com. And is that where people can get this product?
Yes, and it's going to redirect them to Amazon where they can buy it and use Amazon Prime and get it shipped to them ASAP.
Okay,
if they're willing
ASAP.
To pay $3, yeah, if they're willing to pay $3.99, Amazon typically does one-day shipping too. So the more impatient you are, the better Amazon Prime works for you.
And are you looking to get this on grocery store shelves?
In time. We're not rushing to that right now because we were talking to some grocery stores. Right now we want to focus on something that can scale quite aggressively nationwide. And then we'll talk more about the local grocery stores.
You know, I got a different question for you. I remember talking to you a long time ago because of its impact on melanoma, you know, how kale juice would work as a topical application. And now I'm wondering how this Easy Kale would work as a topical application. Have you tried any of that? Like if you put it in a paste and applied it on the skin, either for a blemish or for something more serious, like something cancerous?
That's actually on our to-do list for experimentation.
Okay.
So it's something that we're currently working on, mixing the easy kale powder, and not just easy kale, but also kale and a couple of other different things. So it's something we've been working on for the last couple of years, and we're continuing to work on it. So research can be slow. That's why they don't call it just search. They call it research.
Yes, well, research is slow, research is expensive, and you have to be careful, because if you don't dot your I's and cross your T's and do everything, then all of those patronizing ho-hummers out there with PhDs will bury you.
They'll come anyway. I mean, criticism is a part of the game. It's part of life, and that's why it's always funny to me, because people were talking about the peer review process not too long ago. I was like, hey, that peer review process never ended. It always happens. If you're talking about high school, you had peer pressure. Your peers would evaluate you, and that's why you have the people who are avant-garde and daring and different. They function on a different level.
Do you have any stories yet about how this has helped people maybe in a health crisis?
There have been anecdotal stories, but the thing, and that's one of the reasons why people have been talking about me locally, because it's fantastic, but at the same time, it doesn't really hold any scientific value to me, because a sample size of one doesn't really mean much in terms of this community. But as a human being, I'm like, oh, this is awesome. I'm so happy that this person is feeling better. And these are people that went to Kroger, bought lots of kale, juiced it themselves, did the work themselves. So not a dime went to me. And they started feeling better. But at the same time, like I said, I always caution as a scientist that doesn't mean much unless we get like a sample size of 100,000 people. Even then, there's limitations in that as well. Correlation doesn't equal causation. But
I really appreciate you saying that. I'm going to say that there are many people out there that are definitely using an anecdotal stories, one person who has had some sort of success. The one that comes to mind that drives me crazy is this one woman. I'm not going to mention her name. A doctor, and her husband had Alzheimer's, and she gave him coconut oil, and apparently, allegedly, he got better for a while, and then he ultimately died. But so many people have used that story to say that coconut oil helps with Alzheimer's, and there's no scientific evidence about it. It's saturated fat, and it's not the healthiest food. I'm not saying I don't use coconut oil. I use it on my skin. I love it. I don't eat it very often, but that's a dangerous thing. So thank you.
Well, here's the thing that our world tends to forget, right? They think that you can just do this one-size-fits-all solution for everything, and it doesn't work that way. It's like saying, hey, I'm going to go and try to make a pizza in a toaster. And then all of a sudden that fails. Everyone's like, that is a failure of a toaster. That toaster sucks. No, you're using it incorrectly. Or there's limited circumstances where that tool is applied effectively, right? So people are misapplying a tool and then blaming the tool when they're the ones not using it correctly. It's like taking a Phillips head screwdriver and trying to hammer in a nail with it. I mean, they're going to be like, this sucks. Of course it sucks. You're using it wrong. I mean, there is an innovative way of probably figuring out something out with that, and that's where we get, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. But for most applications, they're incorrectly using the tool. So maybe it did work for him, but that doesn't mean it's going to necessarily work for the other person. The other thing is, as I do my lectures and talks, people make this very strange connection where they're like, oh, my God, you discovered the cure for cancer. And I'm like, oh, hell no. Like, oh, my God. As a scientist, once I hear cure, my heart just, like, skips a beat, like, oh, what? Like, why? Why would they say that? I mean, another thing I would warn them is that this is in vitro. This is like using a model system. I mean,
it's a tease to get people interested in doing more work.
It's not just that. I mean, imagine if you took a toy Corvette and then I figure out a way to get that toy Corvette to go 200 miles an hour. And then I tell you, I can do that in real life. The next thing you know, I do it and my entire Corvette breaks apart at 120 miles an hour. A model system is just that, a model system. When you start to scale it up, things, all sorts of different variables kick in. And next thing you know, you're learning a lot through failure. So that's the reason why I always take people. It's an exciting discovery is an exciting development. This is really a breakthrough, but at the same time, so much work needs to be done. So, I'm sorry, yeah?
We can learn a lot from you, Bilal, not just about kale, but also how to deal with life. You always have a very positive attitude. You keep talking about how you failed a lot, and you acknowledge it, but you don't see those failures as setbacks. They're just opportunities to keep going, keep persisting.
To me personally, my life doesn't have any problems. My life has growth opportunities. Some growth opportunities are more challenging than others, but once I pass it, I've learned a new lesson in life and then developed a new skill typically.
Now, learning about kale like you have, has that changed you personally in terms of your own dietary needs and nutritional habits?
That has. And in general, I would say that in the past, I didn't really eat a lot of meat anyway. I would eat mostly between 80 to 90% vegetables. And most people that know me, I would always generally tend to eat a lot more veggies. Like even when I was growing up as a child, my family would eat a lot of meat and I would be on the side eating yogurt and rice. Broccoli, Brussels sprouts, oh my God, I can eat that for till the end of days for me. In fact, actually, I was at Walmart maybe 2 weeks ago, and the woman who was checking me out at Walmart, she said, "My God, is this all for you?" I said, "Yeah, because I bought about $140 worth of Brussels sprouts and broccoli." And one of the ladies in the line happened to notice me, and she was like, "Aren't you the kale guy?"
Yes, I am. Walking the walk.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny because she's like, "Why don't you have any kale there?" I said, "Honestly, even though I do my research on kale, I said my favorite is Brussels sprouts, broccoli, and mushrooms."
Okay. Well, that's
good. I love kale, but my favorite veggies are that. Yeah.
Well, you know, just like we are all unique individuals and we may not respond the same way to natural treatments or even allopathic treatments, we're all individuals in terms of our taste too. And the vegetables are individual. Broccoli brings a whole host of beneficial nutrition, anti-cancer properties. Brussels sprouts also, they're all good and they're all unique. They're all special.
And they're all part of the same family. Yeah, they're part of the brassica family. So kale's a cousin.
Well, I like the whole family.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, in the South, I only heard this once. This is the first time in my entire life I heard this thing. They said, so I told them, some people were asking me about kale, cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts. So they were asking this in my lecture, and they said, is kale related to all of them? I said, yes, they're part of the brassica family. They're like cousins. So one of the ladies in the audience said, hey, are they like kissing cousins? So I looked at her, and I said, I don't know. I'm not familiar with that phrase. So one of the other people in the audience explained it to me, and I said, dear God, I hope not. That's like inbreeding. So I hope kale's not inbreeding with itself. But anyway.
Yes. Well, that's a whole nother subject.
I'm sorry. That was inappropriate. I apologize.
No, it isn't. Well, we could talk about hybridization of plants and vegetables and creating new forms. Maybe there's a brocca kale or kale, you know, that's
there'll
out
be,
there in the future.
There'll be a cauliflower and be like, howdy, y'all. I'm kale flower. I'm sorry.
Anyway.
See, this is why I became a scientist. I'm a failed comedian.
The dump bump. And there's a lot of different jokes. What I want to say to you is you are King Kale, and I want to say Kale Caesar.
Aw, thank you. Yeah, actually, I got that title a couple of years ago, and it's on my lab coat, King of Kale.
Yes, Kale Caesar.
There's another joke I'll tell you off the air about that.
Okay, I'll look forward to that. Well, we only have a few more minutes left, so Kale, I'm calling you Kale now. What else would you like to tell us before we part?
I am very proud of you. I mean, I know you focused on me a lot, but I wanted to actually focus on you. 10 years, again, is no joke. I can tell you how much effort it takes. We've been feeding the homeless for over 5 years now every week, and it takes a lot of energy. I can tell you there were some days where I didn't want to get up. I was so tired, and I was like, nope, this is beyond me. This is about the mission, the work, right? And I can only imagine you've done that twice as long. So I really want to commend you for what you've done and the lives you've impacted. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I want to say two things to that. One is, yes, there have been many times where I've woken up in the morning and I'm like, I don't want to do this. And then Gary comes along and tells me, yes, you do. And I'm always glad he did, because I always feel better afterwards. It's like exercise sometimes. You feel so good after you do it. And then the other thing is, we did not mention all those other good things that you do. And one of them is feeding the hungry and how you take that as a priority. And that just shows you once again how good you are, Bilal.
Did I tell you I was late to my own graduation because of Are You Hungry?
No.
Yeah, I was late to my own Master's of Medical Sciences graduation because I was out feeding the homeless. So luckily, the staff and everyone was super nice. They skipped me to the front of the line and they put me in a separate section because everyone just texted me like, where the hell are you? And then when the homeless realized I was late to my own graduation, they quickly wanted to take pictures with me in my cap and gown.
Oh,
yeah,
that's very sweet.
Yeah.
Well, you have your priorities in the right place.
Trying to every day.
Okay, so we're going to end this now, and you're going to talk some more about Easy Kale maybe next month, right?
Yes.
Because we have more kale stories to talk about.
Definitely. You're amazing.
Okay, you are amazing too. Thank you, Bilal, and thank you, Mina, for joining me on It's All About Food.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Wow. Well, we tied up another hour of It's All About Food just now, and this was my 10th anniversary show. Did you enjoy it? Did you learn something? Let me know what you think. You can email me at info@realmeals.org. And you know, if you like this program, if you're just new to the program, or if you've been listening for all 10 years, maybe you could rate it on iTunes or on whatever pod application you use for podcasting. I would appreciate that. And share it. Because we're all in this together. And I really believe that eating healthy, whole plant foods is the secret to not only health and quality of life and longevity, but the health of this planet. We've said that a million times on this program, that the way to battle climate change, the number one step is for everyone to reduce or eliminate the animal products that they consume, because that's one of the most devastating things impacting our climate today. Anyway, so I hope you enjoy this program and all the delicious things we talk about. And I'll be back next week with more. Thank you for joining me. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Have a delicious week.